Chapter 4. The pass ran like a twisted gut through the Drakensberg. The mountains stood up sheer and black on each side of them, so they rode in shadow and saw the sun only for a few hours in the middle of the day. Then the mountains dropped away and they were out into the open. Open was the word for the high veldt. It stretched away flat and empty, grass and brown grass dwindling to a distant meeting with the pale, empty sky. But the loneliness could not blunt the edge of their excitement. Each mile covered, each successive camp along the ribbon road ground it sharper, until at last they saw the name in writing for the first time. Forlorn as a scarecrow in a ploughed land, the signpost pointed right and said, Pretoria. Pointed left and said, Witwatersrand. The ridge of white waters, whispered Sean. It had a ring to it, that name. A ring like 100 millions in gold. We're not the first, muttered Duff. The left-hand fork of the road was deeply scored by the passage of many wagons. No time to worry about that. Sean had the gold sickness on him now. There's a little speed left in these mokes. Let's use it. It came up on the horizon as a low line above the emptiness, a ridge of hills like 100 others they had crossed. They went up it and from the top looked down. Two ridges ran side by side, north and south, 4 miles or so apart. In the shallow valley between, they could see the flash of the sun off the swamp pools that gave the hills their name. Look at them, groaned Sean. The tents and wagons were scattered along the length of the valley, and in between them the prospect trenches were raw wounds through the grass. The trenches were concentrated along a line down the centre of the valley. That's the strike of the reef, said Duff. And we're too late. It's all pegged. How do you know? Protested Sean. Use your eyes, laddie. It's all gone. There might be some they've overlooked. These boys overlook nothing. Let's go down. I'll show you. Duff prodded his horse and they started down. He spoke over his shoulder to Sean. Look up there, near that stream. They aren't wasting time. They've got a mill going already. It's a 4-stamp rig by the looks of it. They rode into one of the larger encampments of tents and wagons. There were women at work around the fires, and the smell of food brought saliva jetting from under Sean's tongue. There were men also sitting among the wagons, waiting for their suppers. I'm going to ask some of these characters what's going on here, said Sean. He climbed down off his horse and tossed the reins to Ember Janey. Duff watched him with a wry grin as he tried in succession to engage 3 different men in conversation. Each time Sean's victim avoided his eyes, mumbled vaguely and withdrew. Sean finally gave up and came back to the horses. "What's wrong with me?" he asked plaintively. "Have I got a contagious clap?" Duff chuckled. They've got gold sickness, he said. You're a potential rival. You could die of thirst, and not one of them would spit on you, lest it gave you strength to crawl out and peg something they hadn't noticed. He sobered. We're wasting time. There's an hour left before dark. Let's go and have a look for ourselves. They trotted out towards the area of mauled earth. Men were working pick and shovel in the trenches. Some of them lean and tough-looking, with 12 natives working beside them. Others, fat from an office stool, sweating and gritting teeth against the pain of blistered palms, their faces and arms burnt angry red by the sun. All of them greeted Sean and Duff with the same suspicious hostility. They rode slowly towards the north, and every 100 yards, with sickening regularity, they came across a claim peg, with a cairn of stones around its foot and the scrap of canvas nailed to it. Printed in crude capitals on the canvas was the owner's name and his license number. Many of the claims were as yet untouched, and on these Duff dismounted and searched in the grass, picking up pieces of rock and peering at them before discarding them again. Then once more they moved on, with sinking spirits and increasing exhaustion. They camped after dark on the open windy ridge, and while the coffee brewed they talked. "We're too late," Sean scowled into the fire. "We've got money, laddie. Just remember that. Most of these gentlemen are broke. They are living on hope, not beef and potatoes. Look at their faces, and you'll see despair starting to show. It takes capital to work reef gold. You need machinery and money for wages. You have to pipe in water and pile rock. You need wagons and time. Money's no good without a claim to work," brooded Sean. "Stay with me, laddie. Have you noticed how many of these claims haven't been touched yet? They belong to speculators, and my guess is that they're for sale. In the next few weeks you'll see the men sorted out from the boys." "I feel like packing up. This isn't what I expected." "You're tired. Sleep well tonight, and tomorrow we'll see how far this reef runs. Then we'll start some scheming." Duff lit one of his cheroots and sucked on it. In the firelight his face was as gaunt as a Red Indian's. They sat on in silence for a while. Then Sean spoke. "What's that noise?" It was a dull tom-tom beat in the darkness. "You'll get used to that if you stay around here much longer," said Duff. "It's the stamps on that mill we saw from the high ground. It's a mile or so farther up the valley. We'll pass it in the morning." They were on the move again before the sun was up, and they came to the mill in the morning's uncertain light. The mill crouched black and ugly on the smooth curve of the ridge, defiant as a quixotic monster. Its jaws thumped sullenly as it chewed the rock. It snorted steam and screeched metallically. "I didn't realize it was so big," said Sean. "It's big, all right," agreed Duff. "And they cost money. They don't give them away. Not many men around here can afford a set-up like that." There were men moving around the mill, tending its needs, feeding it rock and fussing about the copper tables over which its gold-laden feces poured. One of the men came forward to offer them the usual hospitality. "This is private ground. We don't want sightseers around here. Keep on going." He was a dapper little man with a round brown face and a derby hat pulled down to the ears. His moustache bristled like the whiskers of a fox terrier. "Listen, Francois, you miserable bloody earthworm, if you talk to me like that, I'll push your face around the back of your head," Duff told him. And the dapper one blinked uncertainly and came closer, peering up at them. "Who are you? Do I know you?" Duff pushed his hat back so the man could see his face. "Duff!" crowed the little man delightedly. "It's old Duff!" He bounced forward to take Duff's hand as he dismounted. Sean watched the orgy of reunion with amusement. It lasted until Duff managed to bring it under control and lead the little Afrikaner across to make the introduction. "Sean, this is Francois Dutoit. He's an old friend of mine from the Kimberley Diamond Fields." Francois greeted Sean and then relapsed once more into the excited chorus of, "God, it's good to see you, Duff!" He pounded Duff's back, despite the nimble footwork that Duff was using to spoil his aim. Another few minutes of this passed before Francois composed himself to make his first coherent statement. "Listen, old Duff, I'm just in the middle of cleaning the amalgam tables. You and your friend go down to my tent. I'll be with you in half an hour. Tell my servant to make you some breakfast. I won't be long, men. God, man, it's good to see you." "An old lover of yours?" asked Sean when they were alone. Duff laughed. "We were on the diamond fields together. I did him a favour once. Pulled him out of a caving drive when the rockfall had broken his legs. He's a good little guy, and meeting him here is the proverbial answer to a prayer. What he can't tell us about this goldfield, no one else can." Francois came bustling into the tent, well under the promised half hour, and during breakfast Sean was an outsider in a conversation where every exchange began, "Do you remember?" or "What happened to old so-and-so?" Then, when the plates were empty and the coffee mugs filled, Duff asked, "So, what are you doing here, France? Is this your own outfit?" "No, I'm still with the company. Not that horse son Herazzi." Duff registered mock alarm. That's terrible," he imitated a stutter. "Cut it out, Duff." Francois looked nervous. "Don't do that. You want to lose me my job?" Duff turned to Sean with an explanation. "Norman Herazzi and God are equals, but in this part of the world, God takes his orders from Herazzi." "Cut it out, Duff." Francois was deeply shocked, but Duff went on imperturbably. "The organization through which Herazzi exercises his divine powers is referred to with reverently bated breath as the Company. In actual fact, its full and resounding title is the South African Mining and Lands Company. Do you get the picture?" Sean nodded, smiling, and Duff added, as an afterthought, "Herazzi is a bastard, and he stutters." It was too much for Francois. He leaned across and caught Duff's arm.
"Please, man. My servant understands English. Cut it out, Duff."
"So, the company has started on these fields, eh? Well, it must be pretty big," mused Duff, and Francois followed with relief onto safer ground.
"It is. Just wait and see. It's going to make the diamond fields look like a church bazaar."
"Tell me about it," said Duff.
"They call it the Rotten Reef, or the Blanket, or the Heidelberg Reef. But in fact, there are three reefs, not one. They run side by side like layers in a sandwich cake."
"All three have pay gold?" Duff shot the question, and Francois shook his head. There was light in his eyes. He was happy talking about gold and mining.
"Now you can forget about the outer reef. Just traces there. Then there's the main reef. That's a bit better. It's as much as 6 feet thick in places and giving good values, but it's patchy."
Francois leaned eagerly across the table. In his excitement, his thick Afrikaans accent was very noticeable.
"The bottom reef is the winner. We call it the leader reef. It's only a few inches thick, and in some places it fades out altogether, but it's rich. There's gold in it like plums in a pudding. It's rich stuff. I'm telling you that you won't believe it until you see it."
"I'll believe you," said Duff. "Now tell me where I can get some of this leader reef for myself." Francois sobered instantly. A shutter dropped before his eyes and hid the light that had shone there a moment before.
"It's gone. It's all gone," he said defensively. "It's all been pegged. You've come too late."
"Well, that's that," said Duff, and a big silence settled on the gathering. Francois fidgeted on his stool, chewing at the ends of his moustache and scowling into his mug. Duff and Sean waited quietly. It was obvious that Francois was wrestling with himself, two loyalties tearing him down the middle. Once he opened his mouth and then closed it again. He blew on his coffee to cool it, and the heat came off it in steam.
"Have you got any money?"
he fired the question with startling violence.
"Yes," said Duff. "Mr. Herazzi has gone down to Cape Town to raise money. He has a list of 140 claims that he will buy when he gets back.
François paused guiltily. I'm only telling you this because of what I owe you.
Yes, I know. Duff spoke softly. François took an audible breath and went on.
On the top of Mr. Haradsky's list is a block of claims that belongs to a woman. She's willing to sell, and they are the most likely-looking propositions on the whole field.
Yes, Duff encouraged him.
This woman has started an eating house about 2 miles from here, on the banks of the Natal Spruit. Her name is Mrs. Rottenbach. She serves good food. You could go and have a meal there.
Thanks, François.
I owed it to you, François said gruffly. Then his mood changed quickly and he chuckled. You like her, Duff. She's a lot of woman.
Sean and Duff went to eat lunch at Mrs. Rottenbach's. It was an unpainted corrugated iron building on a wooden frame, and the sign above the veranda said in letters of red and gold, Candy's Hotel, high-class cuisine, free toilet facilities, no drunks or horses admitted. Proprietor, Mrs. Candela Rottenbach. They washed off the dust in the enamel basin which stood on the veranda, dried themselves on the free towel, and combed in the free mirror on the wall.
How do I look? Asked Duff. Ravishing, said Sean, but you don't smell so good. When did you last bath?
They went into the dining room and found it almost full, but there was an empty table against the far wall. The room was hot and thick with pipe smoke and the smell of cabbage. Dusty, bearded men laughed and shouted, or ate silently and hungrily. They crossed the room to the table, and a coloured waitress came to them. Yes, she asked. Her dress was damp at the armpits. May we have the menu? The girl looked at Duff with faint amusement.
Today we got steak and mashed potatoes with pudding afterwards.
We'll have it, Duff agreed.
You sure as hell won't get nothing else, the girl assured him, and trotted back to the kitchen.
The service is good, Duff enthused. We can only hope that the food and the proprietress are of the same high standard. The meat was tough, but well flavoured, and the coffee was strong and sweet. They ate with appreciation, until Sean, who was facing the kitchen, stopped his fork on its way to his mouth. A hush was on the room.
Here she is, he said.
Candy Rottenbach was a tall and bright, shiny blonde, and her skin was Nordic flawlessness as yet unspoilt by the sun. She filled the front of her blouse and the back of her skirt with a pleasant abundance. She was well aware of, and yet not disconcerted by, the fact that every eye in the room was on one of those areas. She carried a ladle, which she twitched threateningly at the first hand that reached out to pinch her rump. The hand withdrew, and Candy smiled sweetly and moved on among the tables. She stopped occasionally to chat with her customers, and it was clear that many of these lonely men came here not only to eat. They watched her avidly, grinning with pleasure when she spoke to them. She reached their table, and Sean and Duff stood up. Candy blinked with surprise.
"Sit down, please." The small courtesy had touched her. "You're new here?"
"We got in yesterday," Duff smiled at her. "And the way you cook a steak makes me feel as though I were home again."
"Where are you from?"
Candy looked at the two of them with perhaps just a shade more than professional interest. "We've come up from Natal to have a look around. This is Mr. Courtney. He's interested in new investments, and he thought that these gold fields might provide an outlet for some of his capital." Sean just managed to stop his jaw dropping open, and then quickly assumed the slightly superior air of a big financier as Duff went on.
"My name is Charlie Wood. I'm Mr. Courtney's mining advisor."
"Pleased to meet you. I'm Candy Rottenbach,"
She was impressed. "Won't you join us for a few minutes, Mrs. Rottenbach?" Duff drew back a chair for her, and Candy hesitated. "I have to check up in the kitchen. Perhaps later?"
"Do you always lie so smoothly?" Sean spoke with admiration when Candy had gone.
"I spoke no untruths," Duff defended himself.
"No, but the way you tell the truth, how the hell am I going to play up to the role you have created for me?"
"You'll learn to live with it, don't worry. Just look wise and keep your mouth shut," Duff advised. "What do you think of her, anyway?"
"Toothsome," said Sean.
"Decidedly palatable," agreed Duff.
When Candy came back, Duff kept the conversation light and general for a while. But when Candy started asking some sharp questions, it was immediately apparent that her knowledge of geology and mining was well above average, and Duff remarked on it.
"Yes, my husband was in the game. I picked it up from him."
She reached into one of the pockets of her blue and white check skirt and brought out a small handful of rock samples. She put them down in front of Duff.
"Can you name those?" she asked.
It was the direct test. She was asking him to prove himself.
"Kimberlite, serpentine, feldspar."
Duff reeled them off, and Candy relaxed visibly.
"As it happens, I have a number of claims pegged along the Heidelberg Reef. Perhaps Mr. Courtney would care to have a look at them? Actually, I am negotiating at the moment with the South African Mining and Lands Company, who are very interested."
Sean made his solitary but valuable contribution to the conversation.
"Ah, yes," he nodded sagely. "Good old Norman."
Candy was shaken. Not many men used Heratsky's Christian name.
"Will tomorrow morning be convenient?" she asked.